Welcome to the Reformand Initiative podcast, where we analyze and discuss Roman Catholic theology and practice from an evangelical perspective. My name is Clay Kennard. I'm here in Rome, Italy, with my colleague and brother in Christ, Leonardo De Chirico. And also, we have a special guest today. In fact, to our listeners, you know that we concluded our very first season of the Reformand Initiative podcast, and our intention is to start on season two in the fall. But we mentioned that we might have an opportunity this summer to do a few special episodes. And so that's exactly what we're doing today. We have a special guest with us, a very precious brother in Christ, by the name of Tim Challies. It's a name that's very well known in the evangelical world today and for great reason. So Tim, thank you for being on the show with us today. It's great to have you.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
For those of you that don't know Tim, Tim is a pastor. He is a noted speaker. He's the author of many articles. He's also what we would consider a pioneer in the Christian blogosphere. And on his site, challies.com, over 30,000 people visit that every day, including us. It's something that we keep a close eye on, especially your daily a la carte and those useful resources. You're also the author of several books, including Visual Theology, The Visual Theology Guide to the Bible, and The Next Story. And you're married with three kids, and you live near Toronto, Ontario. So again, thank you for being here. It's a privilege. The way that this podcast happened is because we actually included a link in our Reformand Initiative newsletter to Tim's new book called Epic, which we'll talk about here in a moment. And I think it may have actually even been the same day Tim posted on a la carte a link to our podcast saying that you've been catching up with some of our episodes. So that generated a conversation, which we invited Tim to join us for this podcast episode. And Tim and Leo have known each other for a while. Is that correct?
Yeah, for a few years. I'm a bit older than Tim, but I've had the privilege of having Tim in Rome a few years ago while I was traveling in the Eternal City. And I suggested that he would, you know, he would present his book on doing more, doing better, and we already had we had just released the Italian edition of the book, so it was a fitting opportunity to have the author presenting the book in Rome. And so he agreed, and it was a wonderful opportunity to listen from him and to learn from him.
Now, Tim, before you came to Rome and you were asked to present this book, were you already aware of Leonardo's work with the Vatican Files?
Yeah, I think I had come across it potentially through contacts, shared contacts at Ligonier Ministries. I'm wondering if it was through Chris Larson there that he put us in touch. And Leo, you and I met at a conference there as well, I think.
Yes,
I don't know if we met
Orlando.
First in Rome, yeah, or in Orlando, but yeah. We've seen you in Italy and then also in America, never yet in Canada, though we hope that happens at some point.
Yes.
Well, we greatly appreciate your service to the Italian Evangelical Church. We're definitely serving in a minority context, but many of your books have actually been translated into Italian. In fact, I think probably six of your books have been translated into Italian, including Do More Better, Sexual Detox. And I'm actually reading these Italian titles and translating them, so forgive me if I mess them up. Being Modest, and The Next Story, which is one of my favorite books. Yeah, The Discipline of Spiritual Discernment.
Yeah.
At least that would be the English translation of this Italian title here. And maybe a few others. So, yeah, it's definitely been a blessing. And then it was great to have you a couple years ago at our Evangelical Institute of Formation and Evangelical Culture to present your book. And you have a following here in Italy as well. So thank you very much for your work and for being a blessing to the church here. One of the things I wanted to talk about specifically today was your latest book, Tim, Epic, An Around the World Journey Through Christian History. And this is a great book. It's actually accompanied by a mini documentary series that you can find on Amazon, on Vimeo. We purchased it on Vimeo, I believe. And it's a great visual book with lots of great pictures for these historical artifacts. Why don't you explain to us a little bit where this idea came from and what this journey was like for you.
Sure. The premise of the book was to tell Christian history through historical objects. So to search the world for historical objects that would each tell a story beyond itself that was in some way significant and could stand in for a particular period of history or a particularly important character in history, and then to assemble these as a collection of objects and just kind of tell history through them. And so I began scouring the world first through the internet and then through books and then eventually in person. And so over the course of about 18 months or so, I traveled to every continent except Antarctica, and I went with Stephen McCaskill, the filmmaker, and we found some great objects. And of course, no telling of church history would be complete without visiting Rome. And so that's where our paths crossed. And Rome was the one place I had to go to twice because the first time I came, nothing was open. Everything went wrong. For no reason, things were just unavailable and gone, and I couldn't make any headway. So, late at the time, you just said, that's just Rome. That's just Italy. Yeah. Shouldn't be a surprise. And so I had to come back, which was I was glad to do, of course.
Yeah. So did you come in August the first time?
I don't remember when I came the first time.
If you came and everything was closed in Rome, it had to have been August. So
August.
No,
it wasn't. I think it was in the spring. I think it was in March, maybe. It was just inexplicably closed. The Palatine Hill was closed for no reason. The Palatine Hill Museum, that kind of stuff. It was
obviously
weird.
This was before the COVID-19 quarantine, obviously.
So, sure.
Yeah.
So I remember when you came to Rome, we actually got to walk around and visit a few sites with you. Chapter 3 in your book, you talk about the Alexamenos Graffito, right? So I don't know if you'd want to share a little bit about this just as a reference to the artifact you came here to look for in Rome and the significance of this.
Yeah.
So I wanted to find an object that would tell the story of the early persecution of Christians. And so that object seemed to stand in. It's a piece of graffiti that was from second or so third century, somewhere in there. And it's the first known depiction of a crucified Jesus. What makes this one special is that Jesus has the head of a donkey. And there's a person beneath him worshiping this donkey-headed person on a cross. And then the little graffiti says, Alexamenos worships his savior. And so it's meant to be ridiculous. It's meant to mock Christians. And so in that way, you can see that Christianity has always evoked mockery. It's always evoked persecution. And of course, the early church at that time really was heavily persecuted. I thought that was one of several objects I found in Rome that was very evocative and just exactly the kind of thing I was looking for. Something very simple, but that tells a great story.
Yeah. So what was the second one? Would you say that was the statue against the heretics in the Chiesa di Gesù, the Church of the Jesuits?
Right. Yeah, so there's that sculpture in the Jesuit church there that has it has Mary or the church, depending how you interpret it, casting the reformers into hell. And when we were there, we started shining lights in parts of the sculpture that you couldn't see. And we spotted that a couple of things that I don't know that people had noticed before, or at least they weren't clear online, is that the books that are being thrown in are all inscribed to various reformers. So you see Calvin, Luther, and Zwingli, they're all listed right on this sculpture being thrown into hell by this figure. I don't know if you'd say that's Mary or kind of a female representation of the church. It's not clear to me which it is.
Yeah, that's right. It can be both because Mary represents the church, and the church is a feminine character that fits the character of Mary. So you can see. And after Council of Trent, there were many churches dedicated to the Mary of Victory or the Madonna of Victory. And so wanting to present Mary as the champion of Tridentine Catholicism over against the heresies and actually winning the battle against heresy. So Mary was a symbol of the Catholic Church winning over the Protestant Reformation.
Yeah, and we hope that, I actually joked about this, I think, with Tim. I sent you a photoshopped image. We hope that Maybe after years of Leo's continued faithful service, one of these days we might find etched into those books the Quirico.
Right.
I'm joking. Well, but yeah, we're obviously praying for Reformation. Again, thanks for coming. Thanks for talking about your book. We'll come back to that here in a moment. But as we mentioned earlier, you've been aware of Leonardo's ministry and the work of the Reformanda Initiative for a few years. So I just thought I would ask you, in what ways, Tim, the Reformanda Initiative or the Vatican Files website has helped you to understand Roman Catholicism better?
Mm-hmm. So I was raised with a clear understanding that Catholicism was not the gospel and that there should be separation between Protestants and Catholics over the gospel, that we could not combine, that evangelicals and Catholics together. I remember even as a young person hearing that term and knowing yeah. that was a problem. But what I didn't have, I think, when I was younger, was a clear understanding of really why Catholicism was so troublesome or something along those lines. I had to clarify my understanding. So I did that largely through the works of James White, his book on Mary, I believe it was, and then R.C. Sproul, his responses to ECT and ECT2. Both of those were very formative in my understanding. And what they taught me more than anything else was to, as a Protestant, I owe Catholicism a right understanding and a right refutation. So I think we as Protestants can kind of lampoon Catholicism in some ways, kind of erect a straw man and then beat it back down. And so, you know, Catholics worship Mary, those sorts of things that are, yeah. I mean, that's what it looks like, but it's an imprecise way of speaking about it. And I think it was especially R.C. who, through his books, taught you need to understand Catholicism as it is and really come to firm understandings of the reality, and then you can refute it properly. You can understand it well and refute it well. And so I think the Vatican Files was helpful just in the continuing education of what Catholics truly believe. And even when I was writing that chapter on the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation, I know I used those resources again to talk about, to make sure I'm speaking precisely about things like the worship of Mary or the worship of saints or, you know, those sorts of things, which, yeah, I think we owe Catholics to speak about them correctly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, in fact, our major initiative in helping evangelicals around the world to properly understand and evaluate Roman Catholicism is to help them understand that we need to take a systemic approach to understanding Roman Catholicism rather than selecting individual isolated doctrines, which is really what evangelicals and Catholics together tries to do. We believe, we agree on these things, we disagree on, you know, Mariology, the saints, etc. We try to talk about Roman Catholicism as it is, an integrated, connected theological system where everything is connected. So it's something we started off doing season one of our podcast, talking about those two pillars of the Roman Catholic faith, the nature, grace, interdependence, and the Christ Church interconnection. And on that, everything is connected. For me personally, like I moved to Rome as a missionary thinking I understood Roman Catholicism, but I understood it atomistically, but I really didn't truly grasp Roman Catholicism. And the Roman Catholicism that I was exposed to in America, I think it has been heavily influenced by a Protestant evangelical culture in a certain sense. Because the Roman Catholicism that I saw in Italy, and I have Roman Catholic relatives, family members still. My mother was Roman Catholic before the Lord saved her and drew her out of the Roman Catholic Church. But coming to Italy, I saw a different Roman Catholicism, which then led me to Leonardo da Quirico and his ministry, where the door was open to really grapple with what is, you know, Roman Catholicism? How do we truly understand that? So I'm curious, from your experience, being a pastor in North America, having traveled the world, having come to Rome, Italy, and having seen Roman Catholicism here in the heart of Roman Catholicism, would you say that the Roman Catholicism here looks different? Not just from a perspective of it's the majority religion here, but the expression of it. Would you say there's a difference in the North American Roman Catholic culture and here in Italy?
Yeah, so I wouldn't even say in my experience, and you guys would be better equipped to answer this, to me it's not Italy versus North America as much as the old world versus North America versus the new world. What my awakening to, or my first experience of old world Roman Catholicism came, I don't know, maybe it had been 8 years ago or something. I had a trip to Munich, and so flew there, spoke at a conference, and we had sort of this half day or full day off. And so decided to jump on a train and go to Salzburg, just across in Austria, and went to a big cathedral there. And that was the first time I had seen relics. And that was the first time I had seen the veneration of saints. There were skeletons, bodies that were encrusted with jewels, and all sorts of people venerating them, genuflecting, all of those sorts of things. And that's where I had that sort of, we're not in Kansas anymore moment of, okay, this is, I see Catholicism in Canada. I know many Catholics. The town I grew up in was dominated by Italians. It was a very Italian town, so hugely Roman Catholic. So I've seen Catholicism. I've known Catholics, all of that, but I've never seen them venerating a jewel-encrusted skeleton. Yeah. You know, that was new in my experience. And I realized, okay, so that's not that unusual. And as you travel through Europe, I've made it a point now to, like, if I take my kids there, I go and see these things. I have a bit of a fascination now with relics, to be honest, just to see what there is. And I mean, there's so many, it's not hard to find them, but to go to these great cathedrals and just see true Catholicism, or what I would say is true Catholicism. And I guess that's the question, is which one is true and which one is just an adaptation. And of course, Leo, you've talked about this a lot, which is how adaptable Catholicism is, and that it can blend with its surroundings. And so it's going to look very different in Rio de Janeiro versus in Toronto versus in Rome and in Salzburg.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leo, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, that's very true. That's the very nature of what we call the Catholicity of the Roman Catholicism, that is the adaptability, the universal embracement that is able to capture the local culture and to adapt to it. And of course, this is also part of the true gospel witness. There is a sense in which in evangelical circles we talk about contextualization. But in Catholicism, it is more than just contextualizing you know, practices and beliefs. It is actually absorbing pre-existent patterns of life and renaming them, giving them, inserting them into the Catholic synthesis and making them part of a bigger whole. And so helping people not to sever their ties with the preceding culture or the non-Christian cultures, but actually Christianizing patterns and ways of doing things and believing things. And so it is true that in the old world, there is a stratified Catholicity, in that the Roman Church has been able to embrace and absorb a lot of pre-existing practices and making them part of the Catholic faith. And the same is true as far as new worlds of Catholicism, the majority world in Asia, in Africa, in Latin America. They have been outstanding in synthesizing different cultural patterns. And in North America, I'm not not very familiar with that world, but it seems to me that what you're saying, Clay, is appropriate, in that given the fact that the majority culture there has been shaped largely or loosely by a kind of Protestantism, the outlook of the Roman Catholicism there looks like a variant of a mild Protestant mild Protestantism, but it actually retains the Catholic heart by way of attaching itself to the dogmatic outlook of the Roman Catholic Church and being organically integrated into the sacramental, institutional, hierarchical structure of the Church of Rome. So it is very different everywhere, but at the same time, it's everywhere the same, because that's the genius of Roman Catholicism. Roman and Catholic at the same time, same breath.
So, Tim, would you say that North American evangelicals think much or are concerned about Roman Catholicism?
No, not on the whole. And I think that's probably because Catholicism has adapted to be relatively harmless or relatively close to your sort of big box evangelicalism.
Yeah.
And so when I think you guys in one of your podcasts talked about Rick Warren and some of what he said as who at one time was a big leading light, he's maybe stepped back from some of that America's pastor type role. But he certainly said in the past that there's really minimal differences in that kind of approach you talked about before, where you just take isolated doctrines and say, hey, look, they're a little different here, but we're kind of the same. You know, I think in that church growth model, that sort of dominated the North American landscape for quite some time. And so I think Catholicism adapted to kind of meet it on its own ground and to provide some of those elements of a light and friendly and maybe less ceremonial, more informal kind of approach.
Yeah.
You know, integrate more music, do a little bit less of the ceremonial aspect, and it's Catholic enough, but it's also Protestant enough. And if people aren't well trained in what the Mass is, if people aren't well trained in the Roman Catholic view of the scriptures and so on, it would be pretty easy to think they're just like two denominations out there. They're same but different.
I mean, I think you're right. If American or Canadian evangelicals, North American evangelicals saw a procession where a crowd of people are carrying a statue of Mary and adorning it with flowers and responding in a very emotional way to that, I think it would raise eyebrows. But that's not an expression that I think we see much in the North American context. As a teenager, part of junior high and high school, my family lived in New Orleans. We transferred from Central Arkansas to New Orleans, Louisiana, which is very Roman Catholic. And there I noticed that there was a stronger expression of Roman Catholicism. You see statues of saints in front of houses and very devout Roman Catholics there. But the other places I've lived in the United States and even traveled, I don't see that. So I think you're right. And I guess that raises a question. When we talk about our goal is the Reformand Initiative is to unite and equip the global evangelical church and properly understanding Roman Catholic theology and practice so that we can protect and preserve the gospel and so that we can proclaim that gospel to the lost, including Roman Catholics. Would you say that this ministry is important for American and Canadian North American evangelicals?
Yeah, very much. If you go back to the days of the Billy Graham Crusades, right, he would integrate Catholicism right into our Catholic churches, right into his counselors at the end, come forward and be saved and now go to any one of these churches. And I really think from that day, maybe even before that day, there is this idea that these churches are close enough that you could go in either direction and you'll be okay. And so I think we need to ensure evangelicals understand that Catholic churches or Catholicism in general is a mission field. They can co-labor in some ways, perhaps in some areas in society, but they're not preaching the same gospel. And we have to be very, very careful that we don't align ourselves too closely and start to blur those boundaries. My mom was for years heavily involved in the pro-life movement here in Toronto. Part of the reason she eventually had to withdraw from that work was the too tight integration of Protestant and Catholic. So there was a place where, okay, we can co-labor. We both have very strong views and they're drawn from the same Bible, our views of pro-life. And so to some degree, we can work together. But once those boundaries became too blurred, where people are no longer admitting those crucial differences, she felt, well, now she's in her own way kind of promoting Catholicism and was unwilling and unable to do that. So we have to be very, very careful there. And another thing we're seeing in Protestant churches in North America is there is a desire for some more seriousness or for some more ceremonial aspects, some more liturgical elements in church. And so as many Protestant evangelical churches have become so very trite and just really a lot of them have become very silly, Catholicism seems to offer a soberness. It seems to offer a sacramental aspect that can be very appealing to people. Yeah. And so I think we need to be concerned that people are going there thinking it's the same gospel, but they can just have a more serious way of understanding the faith or practicing their faith. And there's a lot of people that are going in that direction.
Yeah, we've talked about it as a weak point in North American evangelical culture, not only. It's definitely something that needs to be addressed globally when it comes to the way we interact with Roman Catholicism, especially considering that Rome is very much involved in unity projects and this modern day ecumenical movement and promoting Christian unity and even unity amongst non-Christians. And we've noted the same thing. I think even in one of our previous episodes is that Rome becomes very attractive to evangelicals who are used to a very experiential type of worship experience that a lot of attractional churches can offer. And so when they maybe come to terms with a certain superficiality of maybe their own experience in participating in that expression, another way to experience, let's say God, church, through a ancient and historic and mystical sacramental economy becomes very, very attractive to evangelicals. So another reason we exist is to continue to raise the alarm, raise the red flags and say, hey, we need to be people of discernment. We need to pay attention to this and we need to understand how to approach Roman Catholicism properly. And again, we want to thank you for the blessing that you've been for our ministry. We know whenever you have posted a link on your blog to one of our articles or our podcast, because we see a massive increase immediately in page visits or podcast downloads. We're really appreciative to you for that. It's a great encouragement for us. And we will continue to promote your work here in Italy. We're very thankful for your resources and the books that have been translated into Italian for the evangelical church here on a broad range of topics. And it's definitely an encouragement for us. So before we go, I just wanted to promote your book one more time. It's called Epic and Around the World Journey Through Christian History by Tim Challies. It's a great book, especially families. If you're looking for something to go through together with your children, it's a great resource. Like I said before, it's accompanied by a documentary series that you can watch together as a family and actually see these cool places that Tim visited, which actually leads me to a very, very important question, at least on my part. Considering all the cities that you traveled in the world and all the different types of food that you were able to enjoy, which city was your favorite when it came to a meal? It's a deep theological question, but
it is a deep theological question. Would it be cheating to say it was sort of an epic related trip? It was when my family and I went to Switzerland and Northern Italy, kind of did that circle through there. And we stayed at a hotel in Northern Italy and had, when my kids talk about that vacation, we saw some amazing things. They talk about that meal in that little hotel in Northern Italy. And it was just a good, solid Italian appetizer, dinner, dessert. And it was phenomenal. And so, yeah, that was the best meal.
Yeah. All right. Good. Well, I think just from that comment alone for our Italian listeners that understand English, you might see some higher book sales in Italy. So, that was a good response. But do either of you have any other questions or comments that you would like to offer?
Well, just a question, Tim, on your book. You've traveled the world to document objects of the related to church history, but you also have met with people of the existing churches, living churches. So in a nutshell, are you encouraged of what you saw in traveling all over the world as far as the state of the gospel witness around the globe, or are you discouraged, or what are the prevalent feelings that you had, you collected in doing the trip?
Yeah, great question. I think if you're realistic before you go, you'll be encouraged. So if you believe those statistics about there being 4 billion Christians on earth or something, you're going to be disappointed. You find quickly as you get into Africa, you get into India, you get into a lot of places, even China, a lot of what counts as Christian churches from afar is prosperity gospel or cults or Jehovah's Witnesses, something like that. So there's a lot of stuff that's Christian-ish or Christian-esque, Catholic too, of course, and it's not truly preaching the gospel. But if you know that and you're looking for God's people, God's churches, wildly encouraging to just meet with believers all around the world, see how they're worshiping, see how they're serving the Lord in their own way. One of the things that most encouraged me was just the Catholic nature of the church, in that people around the world are worshiping in ways that are culturally relevant to them. So same Bible, same gospel, but just different ways of worshiping that are according to culture. God's made us this way, that different cultures have different expressions, different music, different ways of worshiping. And so my next round the world project, I'm hoping there will be a post-COVID world where we can travel again. That's what I hope my next project will be, is traveling the world just to worship with Christians and to see how they worship in ways that are drawn straight from the Bible, but then also really connected to their culture. I think that could be fascinating. And just Clay asked if there's anything we'd want to say. I just think it's important for people to understand, as we come into this phase of, I don't know, society right now, where it seems like a lot of the Christian or Judeo-Christian elements of society are being torn away. It looks like in Canada, it's like the government is purposely going through Canadian history, Canadian constitution, everything, finding anything that's Christian-esque and tearing it out just to kind of rebuild on a purely secular level. There will be a lot of ways where Protestants and Catholics agree. A lot of things where we're co-laboring, or at least we're saying much the same things about marriage, about the importance of family, of religious freedom, abortion, transgenderism, sexuality, all sorts of things. So again, we're going to have to train people well to understand that we can say many of the same things, but we're building upon a very different foundation. We're very close to the root, where we go in very different directions. Yeah. And so I think your initiative here is more important than ever, to train people to understand there are key differences and we can work together, but we also need to keep sharing the gospel and helping those people to come alive to Christ Jesus.
Exactly. In fact, Leo's written about this in the Vatican Files. We've talked about it on our podcast. Francis Schaeffer used the word co-belligerence. So when it comes to how we interact with the Roman Catholic Church, we have to be co-belligerent. That's where two opposing parties find some common ground to defeat a common enemy. But in linking arms with the Roman Catholic Church, we have to be careful what we're communicating. So, for example, when we're fighting for pro-life, that's great. Like, we both agree on that. We can link arms and march together and protest. But if we're praying together, if we're doing anything that we can communicate that we are united in mission, we're united in the message of the gospel, then we are causing confusion that can be incredibly harmful, especially for people who are on a spiritual journey and truly trying to seek and understand the differences. And so the gospel is ultimately at stake. We thank you. You're a defender of that. And through your work on the website, we want to encourage all of our listeners, if you haven't already, go to chalice.com. And read his articles, check out Tim's resources, buy his books, listen to his audiobooks. You will be blessed. And for those of you that are interested in the Reformand Initiative, you can find us online at reformandinitiative.org. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Reformanda Initiative on Facebook, at Reformanda Rome on Twitter. Share our podcast with other people. Tim, thank you. We'll be praying for your ministry. We're praying for you and your church as well, as you guys step into life after COVID-19. And God bless all of our listeners. And until next time.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Tim.